This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The bigger picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Mira Sivisodhi. You know, it's our psychiatry series with Dr. Robin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist. Haven't seen you in a while, Dr. Robin.
Yes, I've been away.
Yes, you have been away, holidaying, you know. What a party. But anyway, you're back this month and, you know, you've got with us also a very special caregiver, poor Kim Peng. She's Madam Kim. She's got two children who live with mental health conditions.
Yes.
And they're both in their 40s today. So
yes.
We're here, you know, Madam Kim going to share her experience and how she, you know, managed both her children. If you have a question for either one of them, give us a call. The number is 03-77-332-900. We're going to be talking about whether stigma has failed us. I mean, we all talk about stigma and taboo when it comes to mental health. How did Madam Kim get through that? But first of all, Dr. Robin, stigma is very difficult to pin down. What exactly is it and how much of an impact does it have on a person's experience of mental illness?
Okay. Nice to see you again, Mira. And perhaps we'll start off with a definition of stigma. I've looked up various definitions, and I think the one that actually fits best is that stigma is a stereotype or a negative view that's attributed to a person or even to groups of people when the characteristics or the behavior are viewed as different or inferior to societal norms. So that means, you know, there is a preconceived idea or a negative experience from various people when they're seen as different to society. And this could be, you know, a stigma and discrimination based on race, gender, sexual orientation. And in this case, we're talking about specifically mental illness.
Okay, and there is something called public stigma and self-stigma. I mean, never knew that there was a differentiation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the public stigma would be, I guess, in a sense, is an obvious term, which means that the stigma that is kind of experienced within society, okay? So it is sort of structural in society, and it creates barriers for people with mental illness or mental health problems, and is held by a large faction of society, okay? So let me give you an example. If there is a stereotypical belief in society that all people with mental illness are dangerous, and this can lead to a widespread prejudice, for example, mm-hmm. okay, which then leads to discrimination, and then hence all the things that, you know, that kind of come with discrimination. But self-stigma is kind of a different thing. It's more subtle, and it's something that sometimes can be quite hard to pinpoint and be quite hard to identify by others, and in particular by the person who's actually experiencing the self-stigma.
How would you describe that?
Okay, it is an internalization. Self-stigma is something that is internalized by the person with the mental, in this case, with mental illness. They internalize stigma based Self-stigma can be internalized by the person with the condition. So with continual public stigma, that individual can, you know, goes on to feel guilty about their condition, feel shame, and then that may lead to feelings of inadequacy, and then they start to actually feel bad about themselves, and then they would actually remove themselves from society on account of their problem. So, for example, if there's a belief in society that all people with mental illness are incompetent, so someone with a mental illness may be hearing this, whether explicitly or implicitly in media or whatever you know, sources that they may you know, hear it from, and that can lead to a prejudicial belief within themselves that, oh, hang on a minute, if people around me believe that all people with mental illness are incompetent, hey, I have a mental illness, so I must be incompetent. And so that may then make them withdraw from society with the belief that they're incompetent and that they can't really contribute much.
Madam Kim, you want to share that journey with us. When did you, you know, realize that your children had a mental health problem? How did you then start to seek help? You know, you want to share that journey with us?
First of all, my son came back from Oxford He's supposed to go to university in Oxford, but after the high school, he cannot study anymore. No more concentration. So we sent him home, and that is where the stigma started, because he feel that he cannot carry on studying overseas. Now, I think Dr. Gonzaga has said a lot about stigma. I think I would like to add something. I would like to call upon the caregiver. Sometimes the caregiver has added on the stigma to the patient themselves. Now, for instance, in MMHA, we are always invited for TV show, for radio interviews, newspaper interviews. And many times we cannot find the caregiver willing to talk about the children's sickness or their stigma. So if they always hide themselves with eyes or change their names, now that behavior will make the sufferer even more stigmatized.
Sure. So that is okay. Sort of like how you explained public stigma. This, in this case, public meaning, you know, even extended family
families,
stigma,
yes.
Can actually,
yes,
affect. But yes, just to go back a little, Madam Kim, when did you find out? So your son at high school level, just before university, sort of experienced some sort of mental health conditions. Do you want to just share with us what happened then?
He came back and he cannot concentrate to study, mm-hmm, anymore. So when he watched TV or listened to radio, he hear voices, and the voices always ask him to do something bad, okay? And we didn't know that there is a psychiatrist in the market that can help them. So for the 5 years, we took him to all the religious healers to try to heal him, because we suspect that something may possess him or something. Right. Then only later on, I met Dr. Gonzaga in a forum. So we realized that we must send my son to see a psychiatrist.
Dr. Robin, so you took on Madam Kim's son, and how did that diagnosis go?
Oh, okay, now, this was a very long time ago. This was in a whole different life. I think it was probably about
18
years ago, I think.
Yes.
Well, he was first diagnosed with if you don't mind me saying, schizophrenia. You're okay with that?
Yes, schizophrenia.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm open.
So,
I'm very open.
So he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and his treatment took a long time to stabilize. I would imagine it took about
15 years all together.
When he went on treatment, it took about 3 to 4 years for him to actually stabilize, because at one point he was not taking medication or he was running away, and it was very, very difficult. But finally, I mean, he's a wonderful man, this young man, and he has really come into himself. He's much better. His illness is under control. He's taking medication on a regular basis, but his recovery hasn't only been about medication. It's been about a lot of other things. It's about him recognizing that he has a role to play in helping other people with mental health problems, which Madam Kim can also tell you about. And he's an advocate for people with mental health in a mental health condition.
So what was going on in the 3-4 years, Dr. Robin?
Does it usually
take a long time for patients with schizophrenia?
Not always. But in his case, his treatment was quite resistant, and he eventually ended up on a medication called clozapine, which is used in people with treatment-resistant schizophrenia.
Okay.
So that took a while to stabilize.
All right. So it stabilized. It was accompanied by behavioral therapy, cognitive therapy.
At that point, in my former life, I used to run the rehabilitation department at the University of Malaya Medical Center. So we brought him there, and he came there Monday to Friday. He did things like group therapy, art therapy. We were teaching them cooking skills. We even had a sheltered workshop. So they had a place to go, and it gave them a sense of something to do. And they also had other people around them with similar conditions, so they knew that they weren't alone. And they could see people recover in front of their eyes. So it was a good environment for them to be in. And we also gave support to the families. We had meetings, I think, every month where the families would come in on a Saturday, and we'd talk about their about their children or their relatives or whatever, and we would discuss how they were doing. So it gave a lot of people a lot of support.
Right. Madam Kim, how did you come to terms with this condition and support him all the way?
On top of what Dr. Gonzaga say, I find that family support is utmost important.
How did you do it?
I will study. I will learn lots of technique, how to help them. I will go for training. I will go for forums. I will listen to lots of talks. And very often, I will encourage my son to follow me, to listen to the forums and talks. And family support is very, very important. We learn how to communicate with them, not to contradict with their behaviors. And we support them, give them moral support, never argue with them, love them. Even they are doing things that is sometimes maybe a bit violent, we still has to accept the situations. We mustn't scold them or hit back or whatever. And that is not easy. It took me years.
Let me interrupt here. Actually, if you want to know about a mother's love, you need to look at this woman here, because she has been to hell and back, you know, with regards to her son and his illness. I think she's even had her own struggles with her own mental health as a result of his illness and her daughter's illness, okay? She, I think, was 24/7 a carer for this young man. She was up at night when he was not settled, running around the house, opening the windows, looking out, thinking of jumping. She went
not
through
thinking,
a lot.
He actually jumped out of the gate, walking out on the street, 1 o'clock in the midnight, and he has been doing that very, very often. So every other night, I have to wake up, the servant, the maid will come and tell me, your son disappeared. So I have to drive my car out to look for him, and I may find him sleeping at bus stop, walking, wandering around, don't know what to do on the street. And that took about one and two years.
And may I also add that Madam Kim is a single mother, so she handled all of this on her own without any help, without any support.
Yeah. You have a daughter who has a mental condition as well?
My daughter had the mental condition later on, after he had obtained a diploma in interior design and went to England and had a degree in marketing. After coming back from England, she started to behave very quietly and very upsetting. So it was terrible because my son was not recovered yet. And then my daughter started this. But fortunately, at that time, during that time, I had two depression. But of course, it took a long time to tell you how I get over it. And later on, I tried my very best. And of course, Dr. Gonzaga has helped my son. So after my daughter came back, I spent a lot of times coping with them. I have to do my own business, earn my own living, and then looking after them. So I trained myself to sleep only about 4 or 5 hours a night, and I have to do a lots of work, housework, looking after them, doing my business, you know, earning a living, and that was not easy.
And
I can tell you that was not easy.
She's actually being very modest here, because in addition to that, she finds a lot of time. She was, I think, previously the Honorary Secretary of the Malaysian Mental Health Association, an organization which I think I helped bring her into, and she's then stayed on with over the years for over 15, 20 years, whatever.
13 years in MMHA.
Okay, and she has sat on the committee, and she's also put in a lot of time and effort, organizing forums and giving talks and also educating people. They also run a family education. But you can probably talk
family
more about
support.
Family support group.
We'll come back and talk about that as well as you know, how you looked after your own mental health and how you went through that. I'm amazed.
You're exhausted listening to all of that, aren't you?
I just don't know how you did it, but hats off, you know, honestly. We'll come back and also find out how you managed stigma, I'm sure, as a family with two children with mental health issues. I'm sure, you know, there was a fair bit of stigma to deal with as well. If you have a question, we have Dr. Rabin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist, and Madam Kim, who's a caregiver, in the studio with us. We're discussing stigma and how it fails us all. The number to call us, 0377 332 900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Birthdays, festivities, merriment. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon.
The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It's our Health and Living segment. In the studio with us, Dr. Rabin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist, and Po Kim Ping, better known as Madam Kim. She's a caregiver of, you know, two children who have mental health issues, both in their 40s today. A single mom who, you know, managed both her children and herself to put food on the table. I don't know how you did it all. But, you know, let's talk about finances, putting food on the table, Madam Kim. I mean, how did you get through those times? You started your own business, you said, but was that ever enough?
It was not easy. As soon as I came back from England, I stayed there for about 14 years. I came back and I become a single mother, so I have to earn my own living. So, like I say, my son contracted this schizophrenia first. And I don't really know how I get through this, but I have to work very, very hard for it. And so I attended, luckily, I always attended these forums and talk. And I met Dr. Gonzaga in MMHA. They always organize this talk. So I asked lots of questions. So finally, they feel that this woman asking so much questions, let's brought him into our committee so that she know how difficult it is to help people suffering from mental illness. So he opted me into the committee. So after a while, I became the vice president for the past about 9 years or something like that. And during that period, I read a lot. I read a lot. I study a lot. Whenever there's a talk, there's a forum, I go and listen. And I learned a lot, of course, from Dr. Gonzaga.
But the
He's
cost
a very
of
good psychiatrist in mental health.
The cost of treatment would have been
How to treat them, and the cost of education for the caregiver. Yep. Whichever there's an opportunity, I would go.
What about managing to pay for this treatment? Was it costly at all?
I have a business. I'm a science graduate, but I don't have any work for me here. It's too scientific in Malaysia. So I become an interior designer and until today, for the past 30 over years. And to be very frank, I do very well in my business because I work so hard. I sleep so little, okay? So I manage to get enough money to pay for my children. And even recently, my son has become the peer support person in MMHA, and he's helping other recovered patients. And so I also help a lot of family members.
He's 45 today.
He is 45 now. Okay. I'm 76.
Fantastic. Okay. You know, we have a comment here from Tai Po Chi. She's saying, after hearing Madam Kwan, what are we complaining about? I have never heard of a more amazing lady like Madam Kim. God bless her and her family.
Thank you.
So there you go. That's coming from Tai Po Chi. Dr. Rabin, I'm sure you see many people who cannot afford treatment and stuff like that. Where does insurance come into this? And I know that insurance companies don't cover mental health. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
It's complicating, very complicating. But basically, this is where we are at the moment in Malaysia.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a mental health problem, mental illness, mental disorder, you cannot get cover for treatment of your mental problem. It is an exclusion on all local insurance that are bought in this country. Foreign insurance companies like Bupa International or, you know, some of the other ones, for example, may, may allow you to, but you have to pay an extra, cost for that. But so in Malaysia, basically, you cannot get insurance for the treatment of your mental illness in hospital or outpatients or anywhere. But here comes the, this other point to me is more of a problem. People with mental health problems. So, for example, if someone sees a psychiatrist, say, 5 years ago and was diagnosed with depression and then wants to take out an insurance policy, there are two types, like a medical card, for example, that will cover you for admissions into hospital for just, operations, surgery, medical illnesses, not mental health problems. Then the other thing is life insurance policies or critical illness policies, okay? So first, let's take medical cards. So for example, if you've had depression, then when you sign up for a policy, they will ask you if you've ever seen a doctor before in your life and haven't taken medications or treatments. If you declare it, they will then might ask you to have another form filled up by your psychiatrist. And in some instances, they may not cover you. And even they will not even cover you for a medical card for hospitalizations for non-mental illness. So, for example, if you have a chest infection, if you break your leg, if you need to have your appendix taken out, you're not covered. You cannot get insurance. And this information then, unfortunately, is shared by all the insurance companies in Malaysia. So you may go to another insurance company and try to apply for a medical card. It's already in the database and you're blacklisted.
Same.
Did you struggle? Did you want to take out insurance for them?
Of course, we wanted to. Fortunately, when my son is working now, the company buy them an insurance, accident insurance. So he's covered by that. So when he was sick, he can go to hospital with the insurance. When our clients wanted to go for holiday, we booked a bus. And we wanted to buy insurance for the safety, for the accident. When they heard that the people who are going to travel are the mental health clients, they immediately rejected. So I think that is
I don't know what they were thinking. Did they think that is really terrible.
That is really, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
That is a discrimination. That is
absolute
really a
discrimination.
It
is. Yeah. It is for sure. I don't know what else to say, honestly. If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or WhatsApp us at BFM Radio. We're discussing stigma failing us. Madam Kim in the studio with us. She's a caregiver sharing her story of, bringing up two children as a single mother. Both the children in their 40s today, both had mental health issues. Both lead normal lives today, right?
Yes.
Dr. Robin, you want to share how, this is a perfect story of how someone gets treated and gets integrated into society and continues to live like anyone else. The perception is once you have a mental health problem,
you're written off.
Absolutely,
absolutely not. No, with the right treatment and the right support, there is no issue as to why people cannot, function as closely as possible to others. But I think what's also important is to accept that there are limitations. They can't do certain jobs. Mm. If they want to go off and be an airline pilot, that's not going to happen.
Yes.
Okay? But Mira, may I just go back to one thing that we talked about earlier, which we didn't cover, which is insurance, for life insurance. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, so we talked about health cards. I don't know how Madam Kim got her son insured for medical treatment, but for life
insurance, through the company.
Okay. But from today onwards, I don't know whether the company will carry on giving him the insurance cover.
So with life insurance and critical illness, a lot of my patients who have applied have been turned down. And interestingly enough, even if you didn't have a mental illness or a mental health problem, if you took out life insurance, if you look at the things that they do cover, death from suicide is covered, but only after, I think, about 2 years of holding the life policy. But if you have an existing mental illness, you're out. You are not covered at all. You cannot buy this. Now, this may vary from company to company. I think there are certain companies which may offer cover, but at a certain rate with certain exclusions, for example. But by and large, it's very difficult. And most recently, the Malaysian Psychiatric Association had a conference in KL. We invited the Life Insurance Association of Malaysia, Liam, and a representative from Takaful and from Bank Negara, and we talked about this problem.
Yes.
And basically, we got the same answer as we did about 18 years ago when I met with similar people when we talked about this. And it was, we'll look into it. 18 years ago, yes. Our current Prime Minister, who we attended a meeting, and he then directed Bank Negara Governor to look into this. And that's how we had the meeting. That was 18 years ago. They said they would look into it. It went on ice. And then again, we had this meeting most recently, 2018. And they said Bank Negara is unfortunately the only body that's going to be able to kind of push this through to see that it's at least looked at. I'm not expecting miracles here, small steps, but we do need to do something about this. Because if I have a mental illness, I want to be able to go to hospital if I have a chest infection and be insured for it. It's as simple as that.
Or even if you have diabetes or, you know, heart disease.
Yeah,
you know. We fail to understand the difference between physical health and mental health. Why is that, Dr. Rubin?
I don't know. My goodness, that's a great question. It's pretty obvious because, you know, a physical health has got physical pathology and a mental health and a mental illness. You can't see the pathology. So I don't understand why people can't see that.
I think the pathology is not clear cut. It is there. It's biopsychosocial, but you can't really put your finger on which
but there's
one of
lots
those components.
Of pathology in physical illnesses which are not entirely clear cut, you know.
Like cancer.
Yeah, cancer, SLE, we don't know what exactly goes on, but we do know that there are treatments that do work to a large extent, and they're covered.
Okay.
So please tell me, why is there such a difference?
Actually, can I add, for mental health patients, if they have insurance, if they go into a hospital, the most they can stay in a hospital is maybe 2 weeks, okay? And it actually doesn't cost a lot for insurance to pay.
So you're talking about treatment for mental illness.
For the mental illness. When they go to hospital. But if you have a heart disease, when you have an operation, it costs you hundreds of thousands, right? Or any kidney failure or whatever. But mental illness, when you go to hospital, it doesn't cost you a lot. So I don't know why they are always giving. I was in social welfare for 4 years. We have lots of meetings with Bank Negara and all this big company. And the only sentence now that I remember is, we will look into it.
Okay. All right. Seems to be the hashtag, we will look into it.
Yes. We have a. Is it trending?
Pervi is actually saying, I remember crying listening to Madam Kim's account when I attended the caregiver workshop run by the Malaysian Mental Health Association. They do amazing work there, strongly encourage the caregivers to attend. So there you go. You've been a shining example, Madam Kim, to a lot of people. Let's talk about stigma. When, you know, having two members of the family with mental health problems, how did you deal with stigma, whether it's family members, members of the public? How did you deal with that?
Family members also have very strong stigma, okay? And like the discrimination, I faced two examples. My son was first offered a job in an NGO. And when he was offered a job, then he need a medical examination. After that, they know what medication he takes. Although we say, you don't say that you are taking this kind of medication. It's not a lie, it's just that you don't see. But they always tell the truth, that I'm taking what, clozapine or what. Immediately, they know that he's suffering from mental illness. Immediately, the company called me up. Sorry, because he was supposed to be suffering from mental illness, we may not be able to offer him this job. And I was so angry and so worried because I don't want my son to get the disappointment. So later on, I told him, I said, if you don't give my son this job, I'm going to hold a big conference with all the newspaper, with all the radios and everything, and then saying that an NGO is discriminating an NGO. finally, they call me back in a few days, say, okay, we offer him a job, but we will give him half of the salary.
So that's an example of employer discrimination. What about family? What about, you know?
Family, we have family. I always send him back to Penang, to my sister's house. And they also accepted him. But finally, when they find out that he's suffering from mental illness, they quickly told me, oh, don't send him anymore. We better not take him. Because they heard so much on newspaper and everything.
About schizophrenia.
They're always violence. So,
did that affect him in any way? Like we were talking about self-stigma after a while. Did that affect him?
For the job, I asked him, I said...
Not job. Sorry, may I just jump in there? So what she said was her family discriminating. So one minute, they were fine with him. Next minute, they heard he had a mental illness.
Yes.
Everything changed.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? Is this person any different 30 seconds ago before you heard what you've just heard?
Yeah.
So this is what people need to think about, you know, that just because you have a mental health problem, and this is why people don't disclose it for fear of being stigmatized.
But do we know what leads to this sort of stereotyping, Dr. Rabin?
To stereotyping?
Yeah.
Fear, I think. A lot of the time it's about fear. It's about what society has, you know, ingrained, for example, the portrayal of the media. You know, people with mental illness walk around with knives, stabbing people just for fun, you know, and... sometimes when they have encountered people with mental illness, they may look at them and think, oh, that one's acting strangely, or and they can't quite understand what is going on. So they fear this, you know, these people. They may appear disheveled. They may appear sort of not particularly, careful about their manners, for example. And that's not their fault. It's, you know, due to the nature of the illness. So they may look down on them thinking, oh, they're not taking care of their appearances. So these are all the prejudices that kind of develop, that they're not doing enough for themselves. They're not taking care of themselves. They're dangerous. They're crazy. They might hurt me. And I don't know where all this comes from, because
I think
people with mental illness are more at risk to themselves than they are to others. Sorry, Karen.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's mainly because these people are lack of the knowledge of what is mental illness and how mental illness patient behave.
Yep.
I think they don't have that knowledge, and it's lack of the education.
And as long as we don't have them, you know, part of our lives, we will never know. And we will continue to have those perceptions.
And one of the things is, media portrayal, as we talked about, and I wanted to just bring this up. Negative media portrayals are terrible. And, you know, when you read things in the newspaper, man one went amok and slashed his family with a parang. What they don't talk about is all the other people who slash, you know, who go slashing around with a parang, who are not mentally ill. But when it's a man goes amok, mentally ill, kills somebody, kills a neighbor or a child, it's viewed with a whole different... values. But, you know, one of the things that was beautifully demonstrated, mental illness, if you've ever seen Homeland, where this FBI agent had bipolar disorder, I don't know if you've ever... You're looking blank, Mira.
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay. It's a fantastic portrayal of someone with mental illness who is an FBI agent, who does a good job, who takes medication, who relapses when she stops her medication and has to go into hospital, have ECT treatment, which is shown on television, which is amazingly portrayed very realistically. Now, I'm not saying that, all of this is entirely correct, but I think it is one example where someone with mental illness is portrayed in a positive light, that they're able to do a very important job. Okay, this is television. I mean, she was a superwoman, but then, you know, there are lots of people out there who are functioning with mental illness and do very, very well.
Okay, we'll come back and continue this discussion. I think what I want to do is go to the workplace now and figure out. We don't usually hear of people working with individuals with mental health conditions. And at the workplace, everybody is equal, right? I mean, we understand you have a mental health illness, but does it sort of bring down employees in that situation? Do we have to double up and make up for, you know, a person with mental health problems? How do we cope when, you know, they have an episode, for an example? As family members, we're more invested in helping an individual. But, you know, how do we cope with that in the workplace? We'll come back and have that discussion up next. If you have a question for us, give us a call, 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-899, or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beautiful festive moments. BFM 89.9, The Business Station. The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I am Meera Sivasuthi. If you've just joined us, I am, you know, Dr. Robin Gonzaga in the studio with us, consultant psychiatrist for our psychiatry series. Joining us also, Madam Kim, better known as Po Kim Peng. She's a caregiver. We're discussing stigma and how it fails us when it comes to mental health. I think, you know, Madam Kim, your story has been, you know, it's hit us all, you know, very close to our hearts. Come back to say, let me tell you, families are embarrassed to have these patients seen in their homes. No one can understand till it happens to them. And you're right, Devi. Even I'm not, shouldn't be actually commenting on this. But I'm going to just ask very quickly about integrating back into society when you have sort of recovered or stabilized in the workforce, especially, Dr. Robin. You know, when people come back to the workforce, they have episodes after a while, you know, and then sometimes managing them can be a challenge. What would you say to employees who work with mental health patients?
In terms of picking up the slack, or
in terms
just
of picking up the slack, in terms of understanding, yeah. You know, that this person is going to have episodes because you know he has such a condition, and sometimes it can be tiring because all of us have our lives to lead and our own challenges, and you come to work and you have a member of your team who has issues as well. Okay. So how do you cope with that?
So there are two aspects to this question. One is, how do we pick up the slack for someone who is mentally ill and who may need to take time off work or leave early or whatever else? And the other is, how do we cope with difficulties at the workplace?
Yes.
Presuming there would be difficulties at the workplace.
Correct.
Okay. In terms of picking up slack, I think it's no different for covering for someone who's on maternity leave or who has a bad flu or has broken a leg. You just chip in and divide the work up and get on with it. I think employers need to be a bit more understanding and have to be also need to offer more support to these individuals whom they've hired who have mental health problems, and understand that maybe they need a bit more support, a bit more coaching, a bit more follow up and on what they're doing, and making and also managing their stress to make sure that they're not overburdened and that they're not overstressed with their work. Okay. So that's the first aspect in terms of managing time lost, okay? But then in terms of managing difficult behavior, I think that's a difficult one. I think, I think this is where support comes in as well. And just telling everyone in the office, don't mind if so-and-so has a little bit of a hissy fit every so often, you know, that's not acceptable because then everyone's going to be sitting around looking for when is the hissy fit going to happen and do we avoid them or do we lock them in the bathroom or something crazy like that, right? No, I think this is where support is also important. I think there are some programs where there are back-to-work support, networks for people who are disabled and in this case have a mental disability or a mental illness where they get support from a counselor who will come in and sort of aid them. And I have another person whom I know who is actively doing this in a major hotel in KL where they take in people with mental health problems. And they've had a very positive outcome from that, I have to say. And you know, because these people who've been unemployable or have been unemployed then go on, get the jobs, and they actually do very well. And they're actually very grateful to have jobs, and they, in some instances, are more reliable than the people who do not have mental illnesses.
Yeah. And when do you know that a person is actually stable and okay to, you know, go back to work? When did you know, Madam Kim, that your son was ready to go back to work?
Actually, I don't know, but it's all diagnosed by the psychiatrist first. Then if he's fit to work, then we will find him a job. And I always like to let the employer know that what he's suffering from, you know, so that they know they can handle him. But to my son, I feel that he has already recovered to certain extent. So we have to explain to the employer. And now MMHA is also having this peer support group. And my son will be going around where people work. He will take the other recovered client to visit the person who is working there, to encourage them, to motivate them. Because very often, they would like to change their job. They cannot be very stable.
Why?
Stay in one job. Maybe it's because of the ex-symptom of the sickness. Okay, so my son will go and encourage them and motivate them. And at home, I always give him a lot of positive thinking, a lot of positive support. And I encourage him, I motivate him. And now, from now, from many years ago now, I seldom quarrel with him. I seldom argue with him. And with this positive thought, I always transfer the positive thoughts to my children.
Sure,
so I find that it helps a lot. Oh, it helps a lot.
That's important, being positive. But in terms of how, when you tell whether they're fit to go back to work, for example, you've got to look at how mentally stable they are in terms of the symptoms that they first came up with, how they're responding to medication, if they're compliant with their medication, if they're having any side effects that may make them, you know, say, for example, drowsy or restless during the day, whether they're able to wake up in the morning on time, whether they're able to go to bed on time. So these are some of the factors that you need to look into to
so
make sure.
Should employers be in touch with the psychiatrist to get perhaps a letter to say, you know, look, this person is, you know...
Well, most people do. We'll ask... most people do this in the... my experience in this, I should say, would be more to do with people who have been working, gone off sick because of a mental health problem, and then who have to go back to work. So the employer would usually need some kind of a report to say that they're fit to go back to work. So these are some of the things that we look at to make sure that they can go back to the workplace, And the ability to cope with stress is very important. Stress and sleep, I cannot emphasize enough, because those two things are the biggest predictors of breakdowns.
Okay. Madam Kim, you mentioned that you yourself you went through depression while you were trying to manage all of this.
Yes.
Who did you turn to?
First time, I went to a psychiatrist and got some medication. And it took me about a year to recover. And the second time, it only took me 1 month. 1 month to recover. But the second time, I didn't take any medication at all. I actually have no one to turn to. All in my mind is, I cannot get sick. If I get sick, who is going to look after my children? I'm a single mother. So I cannot get sick. So I have to be very, very strong. I have to be very strong. I have to stay alive. And I cannot kill myself. And so I keep going until today. Now I'm okay.
You know, support is so important, Dr. Robin. If you are not as resilient as Madam Kim, then what happens? I mean, everything can just break down after that.
Absolutely. I think support's very important. I think, if I may say, and I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet here, I think Madam Kim found the support that she needed initially with the support group that we had at the University of Malaya Medical Center. At the University of Malaya Medical Center, at the rehab, that's when it all started, and we talked about getting her into the MMHA, and that's when she built up her network of support with different people. And that's where it took off for her. You know, in the beginning, my goodness, I sort of said to her at this point when she was a committee member, I said to her, why don't you go and give a talk to so-and-so about mental illness? And she would run away and say, oh, no, you can't expect me to do that. I'm not a professional. And look at her now. Mm-hmm. She's going around. She's on the radio.
Yes, she is. Absolutely. and, you know, we hope to have you back again to share this story. I think it's,
thank you.
It will help a lot of people cope and, you know, have hope. Would you have a message for everyone? And somebody's asking if you have the contact details for the Malaysian Medical Mental Health Association.
I would like to say that to all the caregivers, if they need any help, if they need someone to talk to, by all means, I will be there. I will be there to help them. FOC. Okay.
You can Google Malaysian Mental Health Association.
And I have been doing that. I've been doing that for the past years. Okay.
So Malaysian Mental Health Association has a website, a Facebook page, and you can go and look that up online. Just you know, search for it, and you can join their family support groups and
every month
all the
we
other
have
things
it once
that they have.
A month, and we have the peer support group once a month, and they can all come and join.
Okay, Dr. Robin, your message.
My message is, be kind to everyone.
Stigma fails us.
Stigma fails us, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Dr. Robin Gonzaga, consultant psychiatrist, and Po Kim Ping, a caregiver, speaking to us about Stigma Fails Us All on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.